President Trump says he's determined to build a border wall and will shut down the government unless Congress pays for it. He told Democratic leaders on Tuesday that he'll close part of the executive branch if he doesn't get $5 billion to build a wall on the southern border with Mexico. Republican Congressman Mike Gallagher has been watching this and writing about the power of the executive branch and the dysfunction he sees in Congress. He represents the 8th Congressional District, covering Marinette County, Green Bay, Appleton, and the surrounding area. He joins us on the morning show as part of a series of year-end check-ins we're hoping to do with Wisconsin's House representatives. Congressman Gallagher, welcome to the program.
It is great to be back. I appreciate it.
Well, let's start with the farm bill, which saw a lot of movement this week. Congress reached a compromise on the bill. The Senate passed the bill. House last night voted overwhelmingly to support it. This version does not include the stricter work requirements for food stamp recipients, which was in the bill you voted for in June. Why did you cast your vote yesterday against the 2019 farm bill?
I think there's a few things going on here. The first is, in Northeast Wisconsin and across the country, it is true that agricultural producers are suffering the worst farm economy in over a decade. We've seen real farm income decline by 52% in the last 5 years alone. But you have to ask why. At least in the dairy industry, it's a few things, or at least what I hear from farmers in Northeast Wisconsin. It's overproduction, it's an adverse trade environment, and then it's continued workforce challenges related to a lack of immigration reform. Unfortunately, this bill does nothing on all of those fronts. And indeed, I fear, having learned how Washington, D.C. works, it will allow legislators to claim victory while actually doing nothing to address the source of the problem. So there's a lot of things in the bill I support, and there's a lot that I fought to get in there, particularly on the conservation programs, although we cut some conservation funding, and certainly fixing the margin price protection program. Overall, I fear it won't actually alleviate the concerns of farmers in Northeast Wisconsin. The second thing to say is that, as you alluded to, 80% of the bill is related to food stamps. So a very small portion actually deals with farming. And I think, as someone who's been writing about legislative dysfunction, this reflects how D.C. operates. You sort of cobble together unrelated provisions. You jam an $800 bill through a process at the last second, $867 billion of spending, and we don't consider actual meaningful reforms to these programs. I'm open to the idea that there's perhaps a better way to reform our food stamp program than work requirements, but it's clear to me that the program isn't doing what it's intended to help people get out of poverty. Consider the fact that at a time of very low unemployment, we have increased enrollment in these programs. So again, I'm open to a better way, but I just can't support dysfunctional process anymore in Washington, D.C.
But you voted against the bill, and producers here, they're up against the challenges you mentioned, trade, falling commodity prices, and their issues with a workforce. This farm bill does try to address some of these things by way of subsidies, billions of subsidies for the farmers. But you voted against the bill.
I don't think the bill will do anything to help on the trade issue. It's why I've introduced a separate bill to require the House to vote on any tariff imposed under Section 232. Which is actually really hurting our farmers right now. That's why I've been encouraging the House also to stay in session until we get a comprehensive fix to our immigration problems. So if I did feel that on balance the bill would help or would have meaningful reforms, as opposed to just continuing the status quo, which I think even farmers would admit was suboptimal to them. And my Democratic colleague, Ron Kind, who also voted against the bill, has done a ton of work on identifying the fact that it is illegal under current law to even know where payments for crop subsidy is going. That seems absurd to me, and it suggests that most of the crop subsidy payments aren't actually helping out struggling dairy farmers, particularly on smaller dairy farms in Wisconsin, but they're going to large cotton producers in the southern part of the United States.
Well, let's move on to China and trade, the trade war. President Trump and Chinese President Xi Jinping recently reached a three-month trade truce. What role does Congress have in these trade talks?
Congress should be demanding far more of a role in these trade talks, in any trade provision. If you look at the history of trade legislation over the last few decades, it's really been a history of Congress ceding its authority to regulate commerce with foreign nations under the Constitution to the executive branch. I think that's wrong. It works if you happen to agree with the policy of the executive branch, but there's a lot of times when you might not want to. And I think it's always wise to invest power where it's most accountable to the American people, and that happens to be in our legislature. So again, that's why I introduced that trade bill that I alluded to earlier. I think it makes no sense to put Wisconsin farmers in the middle of a trade war, especially at a time when milk prices are low and our farmers are struggling, and family farms are shutting down. At the same time, I agree very much with the sentiment that the White House has expressed that we need to take action against the Chinese government's aggressive behavior. But the reality is what concerns us most about China is not tariffs, but rather their non-tariff barriers, things like the theft of intellectual property, what they demand in return for market access, forced technology transfer. So there's a lot to like in the Section 301 findings that the administration put forward in an effort to get tough against China. But I would disagree with also picking a fight simultaneously with the rest of the free world under Section 232, because that imperils our farmers. At the same time, one of the best things we can do to get tough on China, which will help us get tough economically and strengthen our diplomacy, is to continue rebuilding our military, which will make them think twice about coming after us economically. There's no doubt China is conducting economic warfare against us on a daily basis, and I think we need to be laser-focused in working with our allies to rally support against their destructive practices like cyber attacks, technology theft. And I hope we can focus our trade agenda and actually our efforts across the government on gathering up the free world to stand up against the Chinese Communist Party.
So you introduced bipartisan legislation that would direct the president to impose denial orders banning the export of U.S. parts and components to Chinese telecommunications companies that violate U.S. export control or sanctions laws. Can you break down this legislation for us, what you're trying to do here?
Yeah, so basically what we've seen, whether it's companies like Huawei or ZTE, multiple analyses across the government have shown what we've long known, which is that these companies are instruments of the Chinese Communist Party. And these companies pose serious counterintelligence concerns to us in the United States, and they're trying to gain market access in the United States. It's why in last year's National Defense Authorization Act, we did a complete overhaul of something called the Committee on Foreign Investment in the United States. And the idea was to give the government more tools to understand when Chinese companies that are instruments of the Chinese Communist Party are trying to gobble up American companies and thereby gain a foothold in our country and potentially jeopardize our secrets and further steal our intellectual property theft. So all this would do is give the government more tools to go after Chinese companies and disallow certain businesses in the United States, particularly those that do business with the Pentagon and are involved in sensitive technologies, from working with Huawei and ZTE and other companies that are instruments of the Chinese government.
Talking with Congressman Mike Gallagher, he's a Republican serving Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District. We're getting up to speed on legislation in Washington, a little year-end check-in. You can join in. You have a line, 800-642-1234. What do you want to ask the congressman? How do you want him to vote, perhaps on immigration legislation? Should more funding go toward a border wall? What do you want him to know about the latest farm bill? What about health care? Call in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. So going back to Huawei for a moment here, the chief financial officer for this Chinese tech company faces extradition to the U.S. over allegations they sold equipment to Iran, and that violates U.S. sanctions. Does that impact the way you view China in trade negotiations?
Well, it certainly confirms what I've long suspected and what I alluded to before, which is to say that Huawei is part and parcel of the Chinese Communist Party. I think it's going to make it harder in the short term for us to get a broader agreement with China on trade. I think there is room to talk about de-escalation, certainly when it comes to tit-for-tat tariffs. But I think we're at the beginning of a long-term struggle with China over what the future of the global economic order looks like. And certainly since at least 1945, the United States has been the leader in establishing the rules of that order, and it's one of an open economy and clear protection of the global commons. It's clear that China has a very different vision of the future, a future that it would dominate, a future in which it would dominate its own citizens and compromise their privacy, and it would seek to be the lone hegemon in the Indo-Pacific region. That presents a very real threat to our values. It presents a very real threat to our allies. And so I think we're at the beginning of what some have termed a new Cold War with China, and it's going to require new thinking, just as our entire national security establishment needed to be overhauled in the late 40s to deal with the rising threat from Soviet Russia. Now, I hope that we can resolve this peacefully. Great power conflict would be incredibly destructive for the world, but it's clear to me that the previous strategy, which is actually a bipartisan one, of seeking to integrate China into the global economy, thinking that doing so would moderate its behavior and that they would become what was termed a responsible stakeholder, that failed. That failed in spectacular fashion. And so the very fact that we're recognizing that we need to take a different approach, that great power competition with China is going to be the pacing threat for at least the next few decades, is an important one. Because if you look at what the Chinese Communist Party leaders have explicitly said, what they want the world to look like in 2050 is far different than what we want the world to look like in 2050.
Very quickly here, moving to the Oval Office, President Trump held a meeting with top Democrats Tuesday, very publicly, proud of a possible shutdown of the government over the border wall. Where do you stand on funding for the border wall versus other critical government operations?
Well, I do think we need to fund the border, border security, the border wall, border, whatever we're calling it today. Having worked on the southern border, it's clear to me that we do not have operational control of it. That's been confirmed by multiple administration officials across administrations. And so the question of how we do that is perhaps up for some debate. The president himself, I think, signaled a willingness to compromise, saying that depending on what sector of the border you're in, you may need different procedures. There's some parts of the border where literally you have sort of a canyon and a river going through it, where obviously you don't need to build a wall through the river. So it's clear to me that Congress, though, not only needs to consider border security, but a more comprehensive approach to our immigration system. Because the reality is most people coming in our country illegally are not coming through the southern border. They're simply overstaying their visas. And so internal enforcement has to be part of this as well. But we need to fix the system, right?
Well, let's pause right there, Congressman Mike Gallagher. Let's pause. He's a Republican serving Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District, representing Green Bay, Appleton, and the surrounding area. You have a line, 800-642-1234. We'll pick up the conversation in a couple minutes here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us. Congressman Mike Gallagher is on the line as we check in with Wisconsin's congressional delegation at the end of the year. It's the morning show. I'm Kate Archer. Ken, thanks for being with us. We're talking with him about pressing issues before Congress and his thoughts on partisan gridlock. You have a line at 800-642-1234. What legislative issues are forefront on your mind that you want to ask him about? You can call in, you can tweet us at WPR Mornings. So getting back to this conversation about the shutdown, the deadline, December 21st, is looming, like 8 days away. President Trump wants $5 billion for the wall, Democratic leaders refusing more than maybe $1 billion and change for that border wall. Do you see room for compromise when the Democrats control your chamber?
I don't know, to be honest with you. What's weird to me is that we're going to vote on a few things today, and then we're going to leave. And I don't think we're in session on Monday and Tuesday. But so for all the talk about, oh, we're coming up against Christmas, well, we're basically taking 6 days off right now. That's absurd to me. I mean, we should be here debating this. And this actually shouldn't be negotiated between the president and Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer. This should be going through the committee process in the House and the Senate, because that's where you can actually examine facts and have an open and honest debate in front of the American people about how much border security we need, what trade-offs we might be willing to make. And so I just bring that up to suggest that it sort of confirms my basic point about the House, which is until we fix the process, we're never going to get any improvement on the actual policy. And I fear that even if we solve this short-term funding issue, that the prospects for real comprehensive immigration reform are very dim over the next 2 years in divided government, and particularly with the vortex of the 2020 election risking sucking everything into its wake. And so I don't think it should be that way. I think we should fix the process. And, you know, I just want to be able to walk into the House chamber and have a debate on the merits about things like immigration and health care and other issues. I'm open to evidence and the idea that I'm wrong about things. But right now we're just sort of waiting to the last second. And that's not the best way to get any good outcome.
Well, we have people lined up here wishing to ask you some questions. Let's go to Steve in Waukesha first. Hi, Steve. Go ahead.
Hi. My question is, for immigration reform, has anything been submitted to actually penalize and massively penalize the businesses that are keeping illegal immigrants employed. So go after the businesses that are employing the illegal immigrants. Make it harder for the illegal immigrants to get jobs and retain jobs if they're not in the country legally.
Steve, thanks for the question there. Representative, go ahead.
Well, you raise a really good point, which is to say, even if we had a wall or, you know, an AI-enabled surveillance technology that would allow us to know with 100% certainty who is and isn't coming across the southern border, until we have internal enforcement, we wouldn't have actually fixed the problem. So in the what's currently being discussed, the short-term crisis, no, nothing has been submitted. What's commonly suggested as part of this, and I do think needs to be part of any comprehensive reform, and we inch towards this in the comprehensive reform that we voted on a few months ago, is mandatory E-Verify, right? So that each company that's employing immigrant labor would have to go through the E-Verify process so they couldn't have illegal labor. Now, in order to do that without completely destroying our economy in Wisconsin, you'd also, in my opinion, have to have a state-based guest worker visa program that would allow farms, for example, to get the legal labor that they need to stay in business. In my opinion, and this may sound simplistic, I think most Americans, as a matter of principle, could get behind the idea that, one, we should make it difficult, if not impossible, for people to come here illegally. We should make it very easy and transparent and out in the open for people to come here legally. And we need a flexible system where we can scale up or scale down the amount of people that we want to let here legally, depending on the unique needs of our economy at a given time. And we always have to prioritize our own citizens and our own workers and take care of them first.
Well, Steve, thanks for the call. And very quickly, as we try to wrap up immigration, Mike, go ahead in Vilas County. We're running out of time on this conversation, but go ahead.
Thank you. My only question was, and I understand what he's saying, and I agree with what he's saying, but the actions are different. I mean, the GOP could have passed immigration reform, and I worked for a department that was in a regulatory role, and I would deal with these corporate farms, and when I would come there in uniform in my squad, all the workers would disappear, but all these big farms had their big GOP signs out supporting the GOP. So I think a lot of this stuff is just smoke and mirrors. I mean, there's a lot of farms that are benefiting financially, not the small local farms that should be, but some of these big corporate farms by having illegal immigrants.
Mike, thanks for the call. How do you weigh that, Congressman?
I think there's a lot of truth in what you said, and certainly having dealt with it up front and up close and personal, you'd know better than I, but I think it just points to this broader issue that the longer we leave this question unaddressed, the worse the problem gets, the more illegal immigrants we have, which makes getting an eventual solution all the harder. And so the longer we punt on it, I just think we get further away from a solution. And so you also raised the issue that indeed we did try, as we controlled the House over the last 2 years, to pass comprehensive immigration reform. And part of that, as I mentioned before, would have made E-Verify mandatory. We came up short in our initial vote. We got about 193 votes. You generally need 218 votes to pass anything in the House. But at that point, we shouldn't have just given up. We should have gone back to the committee process and said, okay, what changes do we need to make in order to get to 218? No one gets 100% of what they want. I have been in Congress for 2 years now. I've never got to vote on a perfect bill, with the possible exception of a bill that I wrote and passed, which I thought was perfect. But you always got to be willing to make some compromises. And so always got to be looking to, how do we get to 218? Because actually the worst possible outcome, I think, is what we're doing right now, which is to say nothing, or we're going to have a CR and just continue the status quo that everyone seems to recognize is absurd and actually hurts people. I mean, we've seen terrible images of people trafficked across the border in trucks or dying in the back of trucks, or it's just absolutely heartbreaking, the current situation. And so I'm willing to step up, and we should stay in session until we can fix this problem.
Representative Gallagher, I want to quickly here go to health care. And you saw this lame duck session that just happened here in Wisconsin. During that session, state lawmakers passed legislation that makes it harder for the governor-elect of Wisconsin and incoming Attorney General Josh Call to pull Wisconsin out of the multi-state lawsuit against the Affordable Care Act. Last year, you voted to repeal and replace Obamacare. What do you do right now to improve health care here in Wisconsin and in America?
I think the most obvious starting point, recognizing that health care is a very contentious issue and people on both sides have demagogued the issue, is to, in an area where I think everyone can agree right now, is on radical price transparency. I think the fundamental problem in health care is that we as patients cannot decipher our healthcare bills. We have no idea what the heck we're paying for when we engage in the healthcare system. And until we can bring some transparency to that process, we are never going to have the power. And the reality is that the complexity, the opacity, benefits big hospitals, it benefits insurance companies, and it keeps all the power concentrated at the top. And so I have a bipartisan bill with a Democrat, if you can believe it, from Colorado on price transparency. I think it's a meaningful step forward. It's by no means sufficient. The issue of drug price transparency is also coming to the fore. And even in divided government at a time when healthcare is a very difficult issue, I think that's one area that both sides can agree upon. And we should look for what's a constructive step we can take forward as opposed to just hammering each other on the issue of healthcare. And so that's where I'm going to be focusing a lot of my efforts. And the other thing I think we need to talk about, we don't talk about enough, is the fact that the question of how you finance health insurance is actually not the most important question, because it's not the most important to your health. How can we create, I was listening to your lead up, and mm-hmm. yet again, Wisconsin leads the nation in binge drinking, right? So that's very unhealthy for our communities. We need to think about how can we repurpose funds and programs to get upstream of health insurance, right? How can we build healthier communities, get people more active? And that's an interesting question. And there's some data at the local level. I had one thing suggested to me to tie this to the farm bill by a local health official in my district. I said, okay, if you were king for a day, how would you solve this mess? Mm-hmm. And he said something. I thought he was joking at the time, and I now come to believe there's truth. He said, I would take all the subsidies that we pay to the sugar industry and the farm bill, and I would repurpose those towards preventive community health care grants. I think there's some truth to that.
And I want to pause you right there with that anecdote. As we wrap up here, what is your New Year's resolution for Congress?
Oh, a simple one. Change the schedule. Keep us in session so we actually work a full week. We're only going to work about 120 days. It's actually less if you look at the full days next year. In what other industry would you get paid for only working 120 days a year? Wouldn't require changing law. Just change the calendar and force us to do our darn jobs.
Thank you for joining us, Congressman. Appreciate it.
Thank you.
U.S. Congressman Mike Gallagher is a Republican serving Wisconsin's 8th Congressional District that covers Green Bay, Appleton, and the surrounding area. You heard him here on the Ideas Network. Stay with us.